I probably then, at the time of Drum Cree, I remember coming home and said to my wife, I said, Sandra, we're going to have some big serious decisions to make about whether we go into government with Sinn Féin. I come home from I remember going to Drum Cree, and I had that awful feeling. I always remembered. I've never forgotten it, by the way. And I said to Sandra, I feel I'm on a tree and I can't get off.
Welcome to Veterans in Politics. I'm your host, Johnny Ball. And if this is your first time with us, welcome. If you're a returning listener, cheers. This week's guest is Jim Shannon MP, who is well known as one of the most prolific debaters in the House of Commons. He's widely respected from across politics. And indeed, when I turned up to record this episode with the staff at the House of Commons, they all commented on what a nice bloke he is. And that's certainly the impression I got in this short chat in his office. A busy guy with a varied background, both in the Ulster Defence Regiment, the Territorial Army, and within Northern Irish politics. You will really enjoy the warmth of Jim's chat with me. And don't forget, you can sponsor or support this podcast for the cost of about half a London pint, that's for sure, by clicking in the show notes below and becoming one of our supporters. Or a simple thing that you can do to help this show grow is hitting that subscribe button and sharing this with someone who would value these conversations. But for now, let's turn our attention to our chat with Jim. Enjoy. Really delighted to be back in Parliament in an MP's office, and I'm with Jim Shannon, who's one of the more active members of Parliament, always actively debating and speaking in the chamber, and we're really pleased to grab him because I know he's a busy man on the Northern Ireland Select Committee, so very, very busy. But before we get into sort of your bit of more of that, tell us a little bit about growing up and what prompted you to join the UDR and the TA later on, because that's what connects us, our military service.
First of all, thank you for having me for the interview. It's been on the agenda for some time, so I was really pleased that we're able to do that today, you know. I suppose maybe born in the 50s, grew up in where my mum and dad owned shops down in Clady outside Strabane. They owned one in Ardstraw, and they moved then over to the east of the province. But suppose if I go back to that time, I can well remember in the IRA campaign of I think it was 58 to 62. When I say I remember, I don't actually remember if I was too young, but I remember mum and dad telling me that they were robbed by the IRA and the post office in Clady. So there's things that sort of maybe shape you for the future, and that's one of those. We moved then from the west of the province over to the east of the province, where we've been ever since. That was 1959. I suppose I always had an interest in politics. My dad wasn't in the member of any of the organisations, you know, like the Orange Order or the Apprentice Boys or Black Persepolis or even unionist parties, but he always knew he was a unionist, and he was very, very dedicated to that. My dad, mum and dad were both Christians, as I am as well. So what shaped us is our faith, number one. And then mum and dad probably saved a lot to try and get me to school, and they sent me to a boarding school, which was a big sacrifice for them. Admittedly, they had to probably give up many things, like holidays, decent car and what have you, just make sure I could get to school and got a good education. But then that sort of coincided with the trouble starting. So ever mindful of politics, Dr. Paisley being the vocal voice in every way of unionism at that time, and I always admired him, even as a boy, as a teenager growing up, his courage to stand up and speak up, even though everybody was throwing all sorts of things at him. So he probably attracted me as an early stage, so became politically active at an early stage. Background as well, went to Canada for a year, emigrated as an apprentice bricklayer. Still had those basics, like riding a bike. You never be as sharp as you are, but you can still ride the bike, can still build a wall. So I can do those things. Came back after a year, a bit homesick perhaps. I joined the UDR when I was 18. Reason for that is I wanted to do something for my country, and also because my cousin Kenneth Smith, who was a sergeant in the Ulster Defence Regiment and also an XB Special, He was murdered on the 10th of December 1971. So he always was a bit of a hero of mine, even as a wee boy growing up. We used to go shooting with him in the 60s. Times were different then. Licenses weren't as strict, but we were able to. He was able to take us down, take us shooting. So always a hero. And then when he was murdered by the IRA, I felt very much that I needed to be in uniform and working to bring an end to terrorism. So I suppose that's the motivation for that. Interspersed with a time in Canada for a year, came back home again, joined the Ulster Defence Regiment again, and was an active member of that for 3 years. Then I left the Ulster Defence Regiment and joined the Royal Artillery. I never had a really exciting job, to be honest with you. I drove a 4-ton lorry. That was my job. But you see, if you haven't got the logistics, the boys at the front can't do very much. So we all have a role to play, whether it's exciting or maybe perhaps a wee bit mundane, whatever it may be, we all play that part. And the Royal Artillery for me were a local group. I stayed in that for 11 and a half years. So I served as a part-time role for 14 and a half years. Used to always say in fun, people would say, you're in the TA, what are you in? I used to always say SAS. And SAS? Saturdays and Sundays, yeah. You know? So that was it. Yeah. Love my time in the Army. Part-time soldier was always exciting. I have the fondest memories, I'll never forget them. The Royal Artillery, of course, we were the long-range snipers. That was in the time of the Cold War. So I remember going to Germany with our camps. Every second year, you went to West Germany because that's where the potential war would be. And then every second year, you went and did training. I didn't get all that much rank in the Royal Artillery. I rose to the heady heights of a Lance Bombardier, you know, my goodness. I'd done all the courses, and I came to me one day and they says, right, Jim, you've done all these courses. You're the most qualified gunner we have. You're going to have to take some rank. I said, I don't want to. No, you're going to have to take it, and that's where it is. So I ended up taking that stripe. I'm quite happy to be they always call me senior gunner.
Well, thanks. Well, first of all, thank you for sharing the memory of your cousin, because I think it's this podcast's duty to always remember the fallen. So thank you for sharing his name. But of course, your service in your community, because there's a slight nuance difference. People in the mainland might not necessarily know the difference between the UDR, as was, and the Territorial Army, which is now, of course, all wrapped together as the Army Reserve. Mm-hmm. But there was some slight nuance in the difference between the two.
Yeah, certainly as the Ulster Defence Regiment, the role was a clear role. It was an anti-terrorist role. We were there to stop terrorists carrying out their operations. It was to bring protection to people, men and women of my constituency in Newton Ards, my constituency now, but where I lived most of my life. The role of the Royal Artillery was a different one. It was a NATO role. Yeah. It was overseas, and we were there. I can well remember when the Falklands War came, and I had to go to my employer, Henry Denny, I worked to as a salesman. I had to go to the manager. I said, look, I've been sort of told that if the guys from the artillery go to Falklands, that they will need to have, they may call up reserves. So I had to go and tell them that would make it. And I was lucky I didn't get called up, by the way. But the potential for us going to West Germany to fit into their role as they went to the Falklands was clear. So there was a more universal role with the Royal Artillery than there was at home. UDR, it was very much Northern Ireland based.
And of course, UDR was the first time we really saw women on the front line for the British Armed Forces. And we should also acknowledge that as part of our work and what we do. But your service continued in your community because you got involved in both local government and also in time serving as a local mayor as well. And also devolved government too. I mean, what drew you into that side of politics before you ended up in this place?
I always had a very clear social conscience, still have. My politics would be left of centre. It's probably not a secret amongst my colleagues who probably lie right of centre, maybe someone very, very much to the right. I'm very conscious that many people don't have much, and for me it was about how I can make lives better. Probably as well, that upbringing I had was one where there wasn't much, you know. We didn't have very much when we were young. Mum and Dad worked hard to maintain a living in the shop in Ballywalter that they had, and we really appreciate that. While we never had very much, maybe practically, we always had plenty of love, and that was really, really important as well. In Ballywalter, I mean, just one example, when we were small, I remember everybody else had all these brand new racing bikes at boys at school, primary school, and I hadn't. But my dad, my dad was very good with his hands, by the way, but he had obviously got a bike, what was never a racing bike, but it was a bike. I called it Bitsa. It was Bitsa this and Bitsa that, I think maybe it was, you know. But although it wasn't a racing bike and it wasn't brand new, it's the fastest bike in Ballywalter. Yeah.
But yeah, so local politics was for you, and then you end, so driven by that social conscience, which is, you know, what quite honestly, I think we need a bit more of that these days, people that put that ahead of themselves. But you are really known as a prolific in speaking in Parliament, you know, in adjournment debates, kind of the less sexy side of politics that aren't necessarily well attended. I mean, why is it, do you think, that parliamentarians come under sort of flack for not attending debates and or being perceived to be seen in Parliament? Because it's something you're very visual and you're always there debating in all of these debates.
Everybody does it their own way, so they do. I mean, I'm not here to tell anybody how they should do Parliament. I just do it the way that I think is the right way. That's the right way for me. As everybody else makes their choice if it's the right way for them. For me, I come here, look, the wee boy from Ballywalter that never was in London four times before he was elected as an MP, who doesn't like flying. You know, these are all facts of life. I never realised that December before 2009, before the election, that I've been coming to Westminster on a regular basis. But I'm a Christian, so I always pray for these things. So I prayed, Lord, if you want me to be the MP, you make that happen. When it came to the choice of candidates, a number of people were interested in being the MP. Interestingly enough, out of the ones, the other five that were interested, every one of them dropped out. And it was whenever, I always remember this, making a speech at the association meeting where you had to be endorsed by the only candidate in the paper. And it was halfway through the speech I suddenly realised what was happening. So I come here with a purpose. A purpose is to help people, to make lives better. I don't sit in my BTM doing nothing. I look through the agenda all day to see what's available, where I can make a point. I don't mind sitting for hours if it's necessary to get speaking. I'm often called last, doesn't bother me. As long as you're called, that's all that matters. You get a chance to speak? Yes. And that's important. The German debates, yeah, they probably are the least attended events. But again, whenever we have a debate last night in lobbying, we've had other debates which are maybe not incredibly sexy or headline grabbers or anything like that, but they're important issues. So I always try to promote strength for my constituency and its people. I genuinely believe, as with respect to everyone else, I think I've got some of the best people in the world. I think they're good people. They're very generous. They're very dedicated. They're always mindful of others. And I think I was fortunate to grow up in that society amongst all those people and then be able then to represent them at the highest level in a positive way. To me, with politicians, irrespective of your beliefs, whether you be Conservative, Labour, Lim Dem, Scots, Nats, whatever, I try and my best to get on with people. Because someday I will need them to help me in something. And I try to help them as a through in their subject matters. And they're always appreciated if you sit on to speak in a debate. And same in Westminster Hall, whatever it may be. Very clear, a very simple attitude to life. Do unto others as you would they unto you. And you treat them right, they'll treat you right.
Well, I think that's been reflected when I stepped into this place and went through security. Uh-huh. And they said, oh, what are you up to? I said, oh, I'm actually going to interview Jim Shannon. And he went... Uh-huh. And the security guard went to me, he's a good man. So, yeah, I wanted to share that with you because that's clearly how you are, not just when the cameras are on in Parliament. And often you speak not only for your constituents, but you actually speak for a lot of us. And that was felt that during that very emotional speech about COVID and the sad loss of your mother-in-law. And I think many people said, and if you haven't, our listeners, if you haven't listened to it, you can find it online, because I think you spoke for us all at that time, how we were all feeling. And I just wanted to thank you for that, because it was it must have been very difficult, because you are someone that is used to speaking, and that was a very difficult, and I won't go over that. I just wanted to thank you, and do look it up if you can. Politics has changed over your years, from local government to here. I mean, have your views changed with politics, or is that guiding principle the constant?
Well, in 85, when I first entered politics, this would be starting my 40th year, by the way. This time is, where's that time? Wow, I can't forget it. But then, you do many things for people. You take on and probably what looks like impossible challenges, and sometimes they work. The main thing is, whatever the people ask you to do, doesn't matter where it's the drafty back door, the leaking cistern upstairs, whatever the issue may be, those issues are really, really important. So I try to deliver to the best of my ability. So as a councillor, as an assembly member, and as the MP, and all those different levels through the years, I was probably a very hardline unionist. It wouldn't be any secret when I was off started. I probably then, at the time of Drumcree, I remember coming home and said to my wife, I said, Sandra, we're going to have some big, serious decisions to make about whether we go into government with Sinn Féin. I come home I remember going to Drumcree, and that awful, awful feeling. I always remembered. I've never forgotten it, by the way. And I said, Sandra, I feel I'm on a tree and I can't get off. You know, didn't know what was going to happen when we got there. But look, we come home. Dr. Paisley managed to find a way forward in partnership government, because I think it was probably the only sort of government working Northern Ireland.
Was that in 1998?
I was
actually at Drumcree with the army that year.
Well, I would have been on the other side.
Well, you would have waved at you.
You may have, but we just didn't recognise each other. So I had a strong loyalist, but I did feel we had to move forward. And what probably got that into perspective was this. I had three boys, and I was just conscious of what was going to be their future of the three boys, and where they are. And now they're married, and they have two children each, with six grandchildren. So I felt we had to move forward. I remember Barry McIlduff was the chair of the Culture, Arts and Leisure Committee, and I was on that. And I remember when it was over, I sat there the whole time, the first meeting, and when we started off, and I says, you've got to try and make this work. So when it was all over, I went up and I put my hand out and I shook his hand, and I says, Barry, told him who it was and he's a Republican, and a nationalist and very strong, and I'm a unionist and a strong unionist. And I just said, look, Barry, we're never going to agree in the constitution. You will want the United Ireland, and I'll do my darnest to make sure you don't get it. But you see, your people, my people, and bread and butter issues, you know, some probably want the same thing. So let's work together on what we can do. So change of political focus, perhaps, doesn't make me less of a unionist. This makes me a unionist that finds a different way to fight our battles in a way that the war with IRA terrorism has reduced, or not all away yet, because there's still many out there who are still committed to it. But yeah, a way forward. Have politics changed? Yeah, I think they have. And now I see things in a very perhaps different way. I'm still a unionist, and I still want our position within the United Kingdom strengthened and retained. At the end of it all, how do we do that? Well, my job here is to make sure and maintain the voice of unionism. Also, my Christian faith, to be honest with you, is really important to me. And I try to live that faith. I'm not perfect, I'm far from perfect. But I do try hard to live that faith every day.
And that gesture with Barry, you described there, there's a very human side of politics and a monumental in the context of Northern Irish politics.
Yeah.
But what was his reaction?
that was quite funny, by the way. It was funny at the time. He looked at me and he was, I think, somewhat surprised, I suspect, you know, because I remember he looked at me for a second or two. Maybe it wasn't a second, but it seemed like it. And then he says to me, "What football team do you support?"
Which, yeah, it's that connection, right? Sport.
Yeah. So I said, "Well, I'm sure you'll not be surprised that it's Rangers, but it's also Leicester City and Ards Football Club." And he looked at me and said, "Well, that's good enough."
Well, when I saw your Leicester. Well, when I saw your Leicester City scarf, it did surprise me, and it will impress my wife when I tell her about that when I get home. She's a proud Leicester City supporter. But you've spoken about your unionism changing over the years. I mean, unionism has changed over the last 100 years. It's survived challenges. I mean, we're seeing some immediate issues which we won't timestamp at the moment because it's fast moving picture. But what future do we have for unionism going forward in the longer term?
Well, where we are today, I don't believe with the Northern Ireland Protocol we are as Margaret Thatcher used to always say that the Northern Ireland people, they were as British as Finchley. Well, no, we're not. I'm not as British as what people are here in the mainland. The Northern Ireland Protocol has changed that. Our position within the United Kingdom is lessened and reduced. So I am concerned over where we are. We're trying to find a way forward in that. We have to reduce the EU influence, which is quite clear. It's not as profound over here in the mainland, Scotland or Wales, than it is in Northern Ireland. We're under a dual jurisdiction. That's some of my worries. We're trying to make things better. We're trying to advance that. We'll see how that goes over the next period of time, over the next 2 days, to be more precise. We'll have a chance to see if we can take that forward in a way. Has there been steps in the right direction? Yes, there has. I'm not convinced personally that we've got to where we want to be. I wait to see the small print, see what the Secretary of State will say today, to see if we get that assurance. I'd probably have to wait to see how that all unfolds. But yeah, I carry a British passport. I'm very fond of my Britishness. I say at the chamber all the time. Whenever I first come here, I always referred to it as the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, because up to then it hadn't been used very much, and I've used that for the last 13 and a bit years in here, or come almost 14 years I've been now, or starting the 14th year, I should say. So I'm conscious of retaining that Britishness that I have, and that my people in Strangford want us to have, and across all of Northern Ireland. Indeed, some of those who may vote for nationalist parties probably would rather be within the United Kingdom, because there's better advantages financially, benefit ways, opportunity ways. I want to see that society where we can all work together and perhaps not get bogged down in the differences. Easy to look at differences, but it's much, much more satisfying to look at the positives and see how we can better work together.
And Jim, on that optimistic note, I know you're a busy man, you've got to get off to the Northern Ireland Select Committee. Thank you so much. I literally could talk to you all day, though.
Oh, yeah, very kind. And thanks again. And give your wife my best wishes. It's always good to meet somebody who's, I think, in Northern Ireland. There's three people that I know in Northern Ireland, there's probably more, who are Leicester City supporters. I'm afraid our supporters club would probably get into chaos. But I've been a Leicester City supporter since 1968. I was at school, they were in the FA Cup final against Man City. They lost 1-0. But they became my team. And we had to wait a long time for the Premier League, had to wait a long time for the FA Cup. But top of the championship, 10 points clear. Looks good.
Well, now I can accuse you of being a glory hunter.
No. stick by what I believe, you know. Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks so much. Thanks to our guests, and thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed this podcast, hit subscribe now. Alternatively, you can support our mission by checking out in the show notes below, where you can rate, donate, or become our mate. Thank you.